I don't really know the names of plants outside of the poinsettia, but I just, I look at it and it's just not, it doesn't scream holidays for me. It doesn't make me happy. So I don't love the poinsettia. I'm sorry. I did not know this is where we were starting, but hello.
Welcome to Debatable, where Izzy Gutierrez, he's over there. Dang it, I did it the wrong way. I'm not in the studio. He's over there. Bill Barnwell's down here. I almost bought some poinsettias this morning because there was a little chill on the air in California. And I thought, oh, here they are right here in the store. Maybe I'll get some. But Izzy tells us he doesn't even think that they're good holiday plants. That's crazy.
If you can buy it like in the first second that you, if you see it in the first minute that you're in a supermarket, I don't know if I want to buy that. I think I want to go to like a florist and see if I can find something better. Sorry if I'm a little snooty with the holiday plants.
I didn't realize we were plant shaming on this show. Very
Yeah.
disconcerting.
I'm
I
glad I
just
didn't get them
fertilized his
then.
poinsettia.
It's okay. All right. Well, Alabaster, what's our first topic? We're talking about football, right? I mean, Barnwell's here, so I feel like we should probably talk about football. We've got the best flag football coach in America, but Bill Barnwell, senior writer for ESPN for
Also
football, he's here
player.
too, so
I still
let's talk
play.
about it. Oh, sorry. What's our first topic?
Really, really leaning into all of your sensibilities. If the Washington football team beats the Cowboys this weekend, you'll think what of the NFC East?
Okay,
You
I'm going
can
to start
tell.
First here because I'm the one from DC here, and I'm the one who might care about this in some sort of visceral level. I don't, though, because I'm not really a fan of this team anymore. But I'll tell you this, it will make the fan base of the football team's season, period. When they won the division last year, they knew that this was not going to stack up the same way this year. Heinicke is dealing with the whole thing. Montez Sweat, by the way, out with more than a broken jaw. He was supposed to come back today for the broken jaw. Turns out he has COVID. You can look up his history with the vaccine on your own. Different story. But, Bill, I'll go to you first. I'm telling you, I don't really know that Washington is a team that thinks that they can do much anyway, but they made the playoffs last year. This win would be very gratifying for their entire season effort.
Absolutely. I'll say first and foremost, it's clear not a lot of stuff is happening because they went straight to the Cowboys. They're like, what can we talk about that people care about? The Cowboys are the default, and that always makes sense. I mean, this is a Washington team that it feels like it's so tough to know whether I want to root for them or not, because on one hand, you have Daniel Snyder and the Snyder regime and everything that happened with the name and the cheerleader scandal and all these other things that are problematic about this franchise. And on the other hand, you have Ron Rivera. And I like Ron Rivera. Like, Ron Rivera seems like a very nice human being and someone who's easy to root for. And so I find myself very conflicted about emotionally who I should be rooting for in this game.
It's very much a devil and an angel thing. You're right. I have no conflicts. I don't care who I'm rooting for in this game. I do know, however, that there are more Dallas Cowboys fans in my like circle of influence. And so I look at this game from their lens and I'm like, all right, this is the Mike McCarthy thing. This is December. This is when he's supposed to do well. This is when, the Dak Prescott and the Cowboys want to do well going into a playoffs rather than, backing in and sort of, eking themselves a playoff spot. I do think that, this means more to them. I think that they really have this sort of motivation to take back this conference or this division because of, what happened last year with the injury and Washington taking it. But I'm curious about a couple of things, right? And this is maybe me just picking your brain here, Bill. But Washington, like the main thing I've read about them in terms of defense improvement is their improvement on third down.
Yep.
Okay. Can you explain that statistic to me? Because I largely believe third down defense is a bunch of nonsense. It's like, it's the one down, yes, it's going to get you off the field. But if you're really good on first and second downs, like you're probably going to be pretty good on second down, on third down. If you're not great on first and second and you've got third and one and two all the time, you're probably going to struggle on that. So is it just this idea that you have to play harder on third downs and all of a sudden that makes your defense better?
No, I don't buy any of that stuff. I don't buy like the you play harder on third down, you play harder in the red zone. There's like bend but don't break defenses. That all seems like nonsense to me. Like you're trying on every single play. So I think it's just randomness. Like we're dealing with just a small sample on third downs. Like you just don't play many third downs because either you get a turnover on first or second down, you give up your first down itself on first or second down. There's just fewer third downs to work with. And of all the things that this team would be bad at, given what they came into the season expecting to be, you'd figure great pass rush, which has been inconsistent. You'd figure they spent so much in the secondary. The one place they would have been good was third down. And I think we're seeing you know, the fact that they've been so much better on third down, they've made some changes after the bye. Kendall Fuller's moved from the slot outside. Like, they've moved little things here and there, but it doesn't make you go from being the worst third down defense in, like, the history of the National Football League through the first 8 weeks of the year to being suddenly, like, a top 10 third down defense. So I think it's more readiness than anything else, but
especially without Chase Young in there for most of that improvement, right?
Right, exactly. Like, you know, you'd figure if anything was going to be changing, it'd be, oh, the pass rush should be great. But like we said, Chase Young has been missing with the torn ACL, Montez Sweat, broken jaw, and now on the COVID list as well. The thing I want to ask you guys, though, from your perspective with the Cowboys, like, I know the record is there, but I think about this team, they got blown out by the Broncos. They got outplayed, I think I would say, by the Raiders on Thanksgiving. Like, are they a team where you feel like beating them proves that you're something?
They're a team to me that feels like they haven't really been able to put it together. They're the one of the teams that I just give a bunch of injury and, you know, COVID excuses as to why they haven't been able to do it yet. They're getting pieces back now on the defensive end. You know, their wide receivers have played, like, their top three have played, like, what? Very little together. And so, and you've got, like, I think Dak's been impressive because basically ever since that calf injury, his numbers have, like, gone down some, but they're still pretty good. And so if he's being affected by that, I still give him, it should get more credit, frankly, for still being the leader of this team and still being able to do what he can do without his receivers all there. It feels like they're getting healthy at the right time, and that's probably going to show in December. It's also probably going to show if the NFC East is what we think it is, because they've got, what, 4 out of their 5 games against the division coming up. So yep. It feels like Dallas is sort of on the way to becoming the team that they should have been this year. And, you know, hopefully, and for their fans anyway, that's what we see going into the playoffs.
Okay, a couple quick things. Number one, the third down stat is, it's misleading because, unfortunately, I feel like it's a stat into itself that doesn't explain the larger things of what defenses are trying to do. What the football team has done more in the last 4 games they've won is simply forced more punts, which for a team that does not have a lot of offensive firepower has shrunk the number of possessions. Therefore, it's been useful. The specificity of third down effectiveness doesn't really indicate what, as you said, Izzy, the series does. So it's worked for them. And I'll give them credit for that, regardless of what the stats look like. And secondly, for the Cowboys, look, I mean, people can say what they want about what they thought the team should have been. The stats right there in terms of their – there it is – in terms of, you know, injuries and playing together, I still think the Cowboys are a team that's good enough to win the Super Bowl, whether or not I believe they're playing their best or not. They're only playing their opponents. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. And so this team might not be everything we thought they were going to be, but that doesn't mean they can't make a run. We've seen that happen before with a couple different teams, you know?
The only thing I would say is, like, there's this thing about the Cowboys where we're all sitting here thinking, okay, well, once they get everyone on the field together, man, they are going to be tough to beat. But, like, it's been years now, and they don't have everyone healthy at any point. Like, whether it's Dak getting hurt last year or this year, you know, even as they're getting guys back now, Zeke is banged up and clearly not his former self. He looks like he's running on one leg at times so far this season. It just feels like we're waiting for this moment with the Cowboys where everything's going to coalesce, and I just don't know that it's realistic because they just have so many players who seem to struggle staying healthy.
Is Pollard that much faster and that much more explosive than Ezekiel Elliott, or than you know, most running backs? Because he looks it. Like, when you see Zeke run and then you see Pollard run, it's like, man, why isn't that dude getting all the snaps? And I'm just wondering if it's just because Zeke looks so slow because he's, like, injured.
I feel bad for Zeke. Like, it feels like he's being put in, like, this compromising position. Like, clearly he's playing through an injury. He's clearly doing something that's very tough. But, you know, like, every time he runs by, like, Tony Pollard shows up and everyone's excited to see Tony Pollard play. Like, the offense just looks so much better with him in the lineup. Like, you know, Zeke has been this, like, super athlete his entire life, and now this is, like, the first time where it feels like he is, like, sitting on the side just grumbling about this guy taking his job.
What do you do? How does the motion change for a guy when you're only – it's like, what are, like, crumbs mean versus, like, eating all the cereal? How would you signify the crumb? I don't know.
I think you got to eat with your hand instead of a
stuff
utensil,
off the floor.
Right? You just got to, like, grab it and then just shove it in your mouth.
That would be funny, though. I would like to see him embrace that. If he finally got a couple touchdowns and realized we're not quite scooping it, but we're still getting morsels, that would be fun. Anyway, who y'all got in this game, by the way?
Ooh, that's a good question. I will say the Cowboys just because I feel like I'm still skeptical of Washington. I'm still skeptical that Taylor Heinicke, if this game turns into a shootout, which it might not, but if Taylor Heinicke has to post 30 points in this game, I just don't think Washington can do it. Although, chances are, it won't be a 35-30 game. And in that case, Washington might have a better defense than what the Cowboys have to work with.
Is he?
I think I've got the Cowboys, too. I just have a little bit more faith in that offense. Like, you know, Bill just said, putting up some numbers that I don't know if Washington can keep up. And, you know, maybe they'll do it all on first and second down, and those third down statistics remain the same for Washington.
This game is in Landover, and I think it's supposed to rain as well, which lends itself towards the football team just in terms of muddying things up. So I could see them pulling this off for sure.
Speaking of muddying things up, if the weather is really bad, if the weather is really bad, are we all going to going to gamble and hit the unders the way the way people should have done on that Patriots game? I think that might be my first bet. Next time I see that weather, it's going to be the first time I place a bet on a professional sporting event. I've been convinced.
Okay. I'm with it. What's next, Alastair?
Personal life rule as a Washingtonian. Do not bet for or against the Washington football team. No matter what you do, they will break your heart.
Never.
All right.
Not good for business.
Taking notes.
Our next topic. How big of a deal is it that Lucas showed up out of shape again this year?
Izzy, you go first on this one. You're the closest one to the courts routinely in this panel.
Fair. So reportedly, he came in at about 260 this year, and he's listed at 230. So, say, you know, that's a pretty big difference. He's looked this for the last couple of years, frankly. So last year, if he was listed at 230, probably wasn't still 230. It's funny because I was watching this game on my phone yesterday without any sound or anything and said, man, when are they going to actually ask Luka to get in shape? Because it's a few years now. And this is the time, last night, I think it was 2 for 5 in the fourth quarter with 1 assist. If you're Luka Doncic, you look around the league, there aren't many teams that have that sort of center around one guy the way this team does. So when do you need a guy on that team? When do you need him the most? You need him the most at the end of the game. You need him the most when the defense is locked down on everybody and you have sort of an unstoppable force. He can't be that guy if he's tired and huffing and puffing and plodding down the court and getting stripped by James Harden driving down, you know, to the basket. And that's where you just look around and say, what are we waiting for here? Mikhail Maroney to get the dude's frisbee off the roof? Because, it does this guy needs to be, and we'd all love to see it. I know he plays a lot of basketball, and that's kind of his thing, right? He had the Olympics, he took 3 weeks off, he played, but playing basketball gets you in shape, not out of shape. But, I've taken 3 weeks off before, and I'm all right, I'm still good. And so, he should be able to take 3 weeks off and not, you know, presumably gain 20 pounds. So it's just confusing to me because, you know, the sport lends itself to losing weight during the season. But if he played, you know, during the offseason, then he probably shouldn't be in this bad of shape.
Bill, this is a topic you've talked about personally a lot. What do you think about this?
I feel like I'm not in any position to pass judgment on anybody for putting on weight. But what I'm going to say is this, it'd be one thing if Luka was playing significantly more poor or more poorly than he had in years past. If his numbers were way down, I think you could sit here and say, okay, well, something's wrong here. But he's still putting up numbers. He hasn't had the best. He wasn't the best the other night. But this is a dude who's still putting up 26-9 every night in 35 minutes. Now, yes, there might be that universe where he gets a personal trainer and is shredded and plays 40 minutes and is an MVP candidate. That's not out of the realm of possibility, but I would say physically, it seems like he's still good enough in the shape he is in to get stuff done. And I think the other thing that comes to mind for me is there are certain players who can pull this off, right? I think aesthetically, I like a league where players have different body types and look differently. I loved Khalid El-Amin.
Wait till you see Zion.
But Zion's different though, right? Luka is a
he's different, all right.
Zion is someone who he is supposed to be physically powerful. At the end of the day, the weight would mean more to someone like Luka Doncic than it would to Zion because Zion is maybe helps him.
That's a great point. I think he said right there, I've never been a muscular guy, so what can I say? Yeah. I look at a guy like Tyler Hero. Tyler Hero is not jumping off the page looking like he's, you know, LA Fitness guy, right? Mm-hmm. But he made a significant leap in strength from last year to this year. And so while I don't think strength is necessarily an issue for, I don't think strength is necessarily an issue for Luka, but I do think endurance is. And I do think if you go back and look at those shooting splits, I think it was 44, 30-something, and 69 at the free throw line, that's not nice. actually. That's terrible numbers for a guy who, you know, should be carrying your team. And so I think the question is not, hey, can he do this looking like this? Or no, of course he can. The numbers say he can. How much better can he be if he does get himself in elite shape? And that is not necessarily shreds. That's just, hey, trim down a little bit, get that body fat down, get that endurance up, and then see what you can, you know, maybe a little bit more strength in the legs. I'm sure that, you know, can't hurt. Mm-hmm. And so I think that's where people are wondering from the outside, like, And, you know, he has all these other excuses. You know, Jason Kidd is a coach. A lot of people have questions. The surrounding, you know, his supporting cast, a lot of people has questions. So it's almost like fourth or fifth in line of things you can say, hey, this is how the Mavericks can get better. But at some point, and it's depending on what organization you're in, it could happen faster than others. At some point, you're going to have to say, hey, we would like to see what you look like in your best shape. And, you know, probably going to be his best year. I have plenty of evidence to say if you get in shape, you're probably going to play better.
I mean, okay, so there's two things. Number one, yesterday was the first time this season, like you, Izzy, that I was looking at my screen and I was like, yeah, this dude is big. You know what I'm saying? Like, it was the first time when I could remember actually thinking to myself something about it. But the other thing that came to mind is, you know, in an era in which we talk about body image, positivity, mental health, physical imaging, like, I don't know that Luka wants to play at a smaller size for basically just sort of who he is that makes him happy to play the way that he already does. There's an argument that I'm not saying that getting in shape is going to be a problem, but if he's got to be a miserable dude working out in order to get to some ideal that somebody else wants, is it worth it? You know what I'm saying? And like,
my only pushback on that is that he's that it's not that he's like, I don't know him that well. I don't know him at all, really. I don't know if he's miserable working out. I just think he's really happy when he's not working out and when he's hanging out. And that's part of the problem. He's a young guy who's got everything that he wants. And like, we've seen this happen with stars before. Don't act like nobody's going to act like he's the first one. And because he can get away with it some, you know, nobody's really like, this is topic number two on a slow news day after what, three basketball games last night. Like, this isn't something that people are, you know, hammering home or anything like that. So, I mean, maybe in Dallas, Dallas Morning News, you could ask Tim Kalishaw again, refuses to be on the show.
Kalishaw keeps making appearances. Disembodied.
I don't think it's body shaming, I guess is what I'm saying.
Mm-hmm. Got it. Charlie, what's up?
Okay, so I have one thing to add here, and that's just that we've actually seen this weight loss very recently work for players in the NBA. In the case of Nikola Jokic, people argued that someone who was super skilled like him, his weight was actually going to be, you know, to his benefit when he was a heavier player. But he lost a significant amount of weight for conditioning purposes and was historically great last year and is even better this year.
There's a reason I didn't mention Jokic. I just felt like, or Jokic, I felt like it was just because maybe they were too similar of style of player and I'd be like putting them in a box or something. But that's a perfect example. Like, the guy won MVP after trimming down just a little bit. Do you see him like, you know, shredding with veins popping out? Nope. But you see him in the fourth quarter still playing great.
I love the way shredded with veins popping out is his go-to next possibility all the time. Like, we don't have
like
to put
CC Sabathia. Have you seen him?
We need to put the picture of the train tracks up because we all know that shredded is what Izzy does. No. You're right. CC is very ripped. It's almost bothersome, but I like CC, so we're hoping he feels good about it. But I just think there it is.
That's also it's my past. It's also my goal because I got to get back to that place.
The Mavs at this point probably gave him a couple seasons to figure out almost for themselves how hard they wanted to push this. And right now they're still in the middle of like, well, what do we do? Because as Bill said, the guy's still balling as far as we're concerned. Right. So we don't want to mess up the apple cart. It's tough.
And I mean, like, I feel like, you know, this is something we focus on maybe more now than we did 20 years ago. Like, if you talk to Shaq, Shaq is like a 1920s baseball player in the way he tells stories. Like, some of it is true. Some of it is like borderline true. Like, in the way that like stuff might have been unverifiable in the past. Shaq says he was 395 pounds when the Lakers won their third title. Maybe he wasn't actually 395, but clearly he was not whatever he was listed at, and it was just fine. So, like, are we having this conversation about Luka if the Mavericks are playing great basketball?
It's funny you should mention that, Bill, because Shaq was especially good at basically telling the stories his way, right? And it wasn't just what he was saying, it was how he is saying it. So one year, I guess the year he came here to Miami, a couple of us got one-on-ones with him, and it just happened to be during an SI shoot that he was doing at the Mandarin Oriental pool. And so we did the interviews poolside. And so, of course, he made us put our feet in the pool. So I, you know, pulled my pant legs up, take my shoes off, put my feet in the pool. And as he's talking about the Lakers and how they treated him with his toe injury, he grabs my leg and starts massaging my foot and says, don't worry. I immediately was not paying attention to anything he was saying because I'm, what was I at the time, 27, 28-year-old kid getting Shaq to massage my feet. I'm just like, I don't know what you're saying, but I'm on your side, man. F those Lakers. But I didn't really say that, but you know what I mean.
The Shaq method, that's great. Yeah. I did not know that story. And I'm breaking out the impromptu foot massage is a great way to get somebody on your side. I love that.
I don't know if he would do that in 2021, but... back probably in 2005, not. You know, that was still okay.
I've never thought about this before when it's come to athletes. I would like to get a massage from Shaq. I feel like he'd be good at it.
Strong hands. He's also put me in a headlock, which was not as fun. But that, you know,
that's not going to be part of my massage.
That was a different time. That was not poolside.
All right, guys, it's time to play a game.
There we go.
And that game is Whodunit. We'll give you a quote. You guys get to come together as a group in a minute and tell us whodunit. Your first
Bill,
quote.
Quickly, does Bill know what this game – Bill, how many times have you been on this show? I don't know. I never really know who's doing what. Twice before?
I've been on twice. I have played whodunit before, but it was with Dominique, who doesn't pay any attention to the rules of the game. So this would be nice to play
with Dominique. So Dominique and I are cut from the same cloth, so we'll see how this goes. What's the first quote?
All right, first quote. That's right, we spanked your butt. Put your diaper on and go back to Boston. And your choices are Anthony Davis, Snoop Dogg, Shaq, and James Worthy.
Well, Anthony Davis had no room to talk after that first half he played yesterday, so it probably wasn't him.
Not him.
Now, Shaq isn't a wee guy, at least not at this point with the Lakers, so it's got to be B or D. Is James Worthy part of the pre and post?
So Lakers James Worthy is 100% a part of the pre and post out here on Spectrum. And James Worthy has been known to light up a cigar or two on set. And I'm fairly certain last night James Worthy lit up a cigar. And also here, just to round this out, Bill, the Lakers-Celtics rivalry was only really the biggest thing when a guy like James Worthy was on the court of all these guys. So he's the one I would think would take this the most seriously in terms of those listed. I'm going to go with D. James Worthy.
I also follow Snoop Dogg on Instagram, and I didn't see anything like that. So I'm going to stick with Worthy.
I think he was at the Kings game last night, like the hockey game. I'm fairly certain.
Wow.
Yeah,
that was a good performance tonight. Still not as sharp as they want to be, but sharp enough to get that Celtic ass. Cedric Maxwell, I started saying get that Celtic ass maybe 3 years ago, and all of a sudden you want to start saying get that Laker ass. Make up your own stuff. That's my line. And while you're trying to come up with your own line, take this with you.
Big Game, we got another surprise for you. So glad you called him out.
That's right. We spanked your butt. Put your diaper on and go back to Boston, boy.
I don't know if that comes across the way James thinks it comes across. Get that Celtic ass is probably today a little bit of different context.
References are a little dated, but thank you, Alabaster, for my point. James Worthy faced the Celtics in the finals three times, so he's got a little extra personal vitriol. But I didn't realize he still had this kind of smoke. I guess figuratively, I knew literally, he smokes all the time on the set, but I didn't realize he was still this fired up, you know what I'm saying, after regular season wins in December. Nice work.
See, I'm happy you gave me the context, like he's on the pre- and post-game show, because if you hadn't told me that, I would have assumed that he had just stumbled onto the set And they had just been like, it's James Worthy. Like, there's nothing we can do. Like, we just have to stick with it. Like, he's not looking at any of the cameras. He's like, starts smoking, which I'm pretty sure, I don't know. Like, I feel like in California, that is not legal to smoke indoors. But, but you know what? It's James Worthy. I think you let it happen. I also like that he's complaining about Maxwell stealing a bit when he's literally smoking a victory cigar, like this classic Celtics bit. It's just, it's like such great trolling that I feel like it goes above and beyond what I ever can even hope for from a post-game show.
If the NBA likes to reprimand LeBron for cursing on camera, they should probably reach out to James Worthy, because why can he get away with it, you know? Especially with that particular phrase, which, you know, 15 and 16-year-olds at home. What does he mean by that?
What are we doing to that S?
Okay, we're not going to be here for the James Worthy slander while I'm sitting here in Los Angeles watching this guy every day, okay? The references might be a little dated. As Star Wars would say, it's an old code, but it checks out. You know what I'm saying? We're going to let James Worthy cook, all right?
No. I
will say this real quick about LeBron James. LeBron, when everybody talks about what's wrong with the Lakers, it's because you haven't had a steady dose of LeBron yet. Mm-hmm. And LeBron, right about now, is giving you that steady dose. And he kind of snuck up on us there. Wow. And so he will fix what ails the Lakers for the most part in the regular season. And fortunately, that allows Anthony Davis to get himself into the right place. And, you know, some people I'm reading, you know, maybe he worked out too much this summer. Maybe he needs to go hang out with Luka Doncic a little bit and trim it down a little. And so he has that explosiveness back. Whatever's going on with Anthony Davis, where people are just lighting him up on camera with the red light on, or able to say all these things about him, he should be able to work his way back to the Anthony Davis we expect by the end of the year. And a large part of that is because LeBron, and because, you know, it seems like Russell Westbrook's going to have some pretty good games as well.
So you guys know about Cameo, right?
The service where celebrities from the 80s tell people stories from their bedside or whatever. They're like poolside whatevers, and people charge them money
Happy
for it.
Happy Chanukah.
I would pay $500 if I could get James Worthy to just like show up at an event that I was at and just like stumble on and do the exact same thing he did in this segment in the post-game show, and then just immediately leave without taking any questions. That would be a service.
You think James Worthy's rate is $500? James Worthy is not even looking at his cell phone for less than $500. That man is minted in a lot of ways. Separately, I do want to say this about the big three before we get out of here, which is before we get out of this segment. Nobody is denying that at their best on any given night, the Lakers big three can hang with anybody in the league. The question is, can you get everybody on the court for enough games together for this to happen? Not just from a gelling standpoint, from a man hours standpoint, because of the relative age and injury situation of your team. I mean this. This stuff starts to add up. Guys miss a game here and there for this. Guys miss a game here and there for that. They overlap.
However,
it's not about the talent at the top. It's about whether or not you can just plain get it together, literally, on the court.
I would say sort of the unintentional consequence of that is when you force all these other guys to play as many minutes, you can just sort of filter through who is going to be able to be in the rotation and who is not. And I said it from the beginning of the year. Like, guys like Malik Monk need to establish themselves as solid players, rotation players, because they've got the youthfulness, they've got the ability to run. And I mean, you saw that windmill he had yesterday. Malik's got a 40-inch vert. And so those guys, you know, when Kendrick Nunn, if he gets healthy, when those guys can come back and provide some sort of lift energy-wise and just scoring-wise as well, especially when we start to get to the dog days of the season, like, that's going to be critical. So it might be beneficial for them in that respect, as long as they don't lose too much of a space in the standings.
And, I mean, do you think this is just a load management thing where it's just basically, hey, like, let's just try and keep everybody afloat until we get to the last 10 games of the regular season and get to the postseason so we can kind of have everyone as fresh as possible for, you know, a grueling, like, 2-month process at the end of the year?
I don't know if Frank Vogel's okay with that, because it probably means his job's going to be on the line throughout that process. So I don't know if it's purposeful. I think it's just sort of, you know, an unintentional thing.
Right, and we saw how that worked out last year. You know what I'm saying? Like, yeah, you can load manage all you want, but you might need that space because you might have to face somebody in the first round that's going to bang you out, and that happened. Alabama.
Two interjections in one show? Is that common?
This is a very important double interjection.
Oh, whoa.
The first one, James Worthy, is on Cameo.
What?
For $200.
See, I told you.
Okay, you second said part, show up to the party for $500.
That's an extra $300.
That's a lot more.
For $1,400, you can book him through Business Cameo, where he will show up to your party.
Told you. Wow. Told you. Triple.
$1,400. That's triple. That's affordable, okay, though. That's triple. Not terrible.
Is it
I think Bill would still pay that.
Is it negotiable?
Wow.
So I think I can talk him down to a grand if I have to.
Okay. All right. Yeah. That's funny. All right. What's the next topic that's not named?
All right. Anymore? We have a bonus whodunit on the Lakers to break up the segment. And this one is, if the Lakers are going to turn their season around, there are three things they must do on defense. First, they must play better individual defense. Second, play better team defense. And third, transition. They must improve their transition defense. And your choices are A, Magic Johnson, B, at Magic Johnson, C, Irvin Johnson, or D, Irvin Magic Johnson.
Didn't somebody on the show enlighten us as to who actually tweets for Magic Johnson? You were on that show,
David,
right?
No, who was it? I remember David Jacoby.
Christine Williamson.
It was Christine Williamson, whose friend did it. David Jacoby told me in person that she had just told him that. That's how I remembered him.
Really?
This is obviously at Magic Johnson, because this is just too many words. And, like, look, apparently what he does is he dictates his tweets, and that's how they get out there. This is one that I felt like could have been.
So he said out loud, Clinton. So he said out loud, they need to play better individual defense, better team defense in transition. How about just say better defense, man? Like, save some characters.
No.
Can we see the tweet?
Here's the thing. Here's what I feel like. At first, I really think it was Magic Johnson himself doing these tweets. This one feels like they fed a bunch of Magic Johnson tweets to like an AI bot. And this is like what the AI bot spit out.
It's true.
I think they need to run like a GIF of him smiling with every single one. So you're distracted and you're like, oh, I can't hate on Magic Johnson. Look at that smile.
Important part about this. The last point, they must improve their transition defense. That has an exclamation point. So that's the most important, in my opinion, in Magic's mind. Just the way this punctuated, you can tell that's clearly where he's ending. That's what matters.
That's a good one. Good job, Alabaster. Just picturing Magic, telling this to the person who's transcribing this tweet, make sure you put the exclamation point in. That's the most important part.
Meanwhile, James Worthy is dictating, get that, Celtics.
James Worthy's just trying to find the cigar emoji on his phone.
That was terrible. I can't believe this. If I have to go on the radio Maxwell. Anytime soon in L.A., everybody's going to be like, what were you doing on that stupid internet show? We're letting those people make fun of our Lakers.
Hey, as long as they were watching.
That's true. Very good point. What's next?
All right, we got one more quote for you guys. I know people might be concerned about my minutes, and I got injured before and all this extra bleep, but we'll figure it out if I get there. Right now, I want to play basketball. I might play 48 tomorrow, just because, give y'all something to talk about. And your choices are A, Kevin Durant, B, LeBron, C, Joel Embiid, or D, Playoff P.
I think I'm going to ruin this because I'm pretty sure this sounds like somebody talking about a back-to-back, and I'm pretty sure I know only one of those four is playing in a back-to-back tonight. But I'm going to let you guys guess first.
I'll jump in here quickly, Bill, and I'll say this last sentence is the real giveaway here that leads me to believe it's A. There's just enough of a level of pettiness
me
on
versus
there
you.
That we've seen some unnecessary binaries to create, you know, situations of opposition that are not necessarily there. That's very KD. That's going to be my vote.
So this is someone who clearly is terminally online. So we can rule out LeBron. We can rule out Paul George. It's either A or C. And like you said, Joel Embiid's like too happy generally to give this kind of quote. So I feel like just narrowing it down, it has to be KD.
I do not believe that LeBron James doesn't spend a ton of time on media. I believe he also does, but my answer remains KD.
I mean, I know people may be concerned about my minutes and I got injured before and all this shit, but we'll figure that out if I get there. Right now, I want to play basketball. I might play 48 tomorrow. Just because. Give me something to talk about.
Also, for those of you who don't know, this is a very DC sentence. You know what I'm saying? For all this extra ish, I might play just because. Like, he sounds like a lot of guys that I grew up with. Just reading that, I could tell the cadence of the speech. And I was like, that's a brother from DC. So. You could tell.
It's funny because at the beginning of the season, I wasn't sure if Kevin Durant necessarily wanted this sort of MVP pressure because, like, it's every night. And frankly, like, with the Warriors, didn't have to think that way, right? And I know he's been off with Warriors for a couple of years now, right. But this was something where it's just like, all right, maybe by, you know, February, March, he's just going to be like, all right, I've got James Harden, I can have a 15-8 night and I'm okay. But it seems like he's just, you know, love of the game type of guy. And, you know, I listened to that ESPN Daily with, who was it, Kirk Goldsberry and Pablo Torre. And, you know, he basically said that Kevin Durant is, you know, today's Kobe slash Michael, where that mid-range game is more effective, frankly, right now than the average three-point shot. And, you know, watching him, you're just like, yeah, like last night, it's just, you just replace him with Kobe Bryant and it's a lot of the same images. And like, so that's the type of stuff where we're just like, you don't see that with everybody else. You don't see the mid-range game, the beauty of that. You don't see the fadeaways where it's just like hand in your face, doesn't matter. Mm-hmm. And so I want him to think this way. I want him to play 48 minutes because he's such a unique scorer. There's not that many, I mean, ever. But obviously right now, there's not many guys where you look at and say, wow, he's doing all that stuff and it's unstoppable.
I mean, it felt like it was sort of like a natural thing, like he fell into almost, where it was like, you know, heading into the year, you'd figure, okay, well, the Kyrie thing will get resolved somehow. Like, you know, there'll be some kind of loophole that works and he'll be there. And then he hasn't been there. And so it sort of felt like he had to assume that mantle when really, I mean, throughout his entire career, pretty much, when he's been playing at, you know, a championship level, he's always had more help. And I know that, yes, he has Harden, and of course that makes a big difference, but like this has been his time where it's okay, I have to be the one who steps up. And we saw, you know, a little bit here and there, like he's been able to be that player, and we, like, in our heads, I think we know he can do it, but I think this is the first time we've actually had to see him do it, you know, over the course of a full season, missing a really key component.
Can we look at this right here, pointing down? Or Steve Nash, by the way, yeah. Lock up the Coach of the Year award for this tremendous level of analysis from him about how he approaches the basketball game. I'm like, that's just a really funny and obvious thing to say because he's, you know, a mind. But
yeah, it's funny until, you know, there's some sort of injury in March and KD's like, maybe I should have played 35 minutes ago.
Just saying. What's next?
All right, guys, we are moving on to another game.
Two games.
And that game is What Are the Chances, where we'll show you a clip, and you let us know the chances. And we only have one today. It's the final topic in the show.
Okay.
What are the chances 99 should keep playing receiver?
Oh!
Oh!
Yes!
Oh!
That was what, showing what, off.
What a catch by Luka Doncic there. Incredible.
See, this is, I was trying to get ahead of it. I was trying to get ahead of the joke and Bill Bumrunner.
He said it. Not
I
us.
I could not there get the block. It's like when you're watching the guy fly by and you see your quarterback get blown up when you're trying to protect. Can we run that back, though? I want to show you who the real MVP of the slip is. Look at this. Look at my man 1-4. Stays through the effort. Just to knock him down. That ball could have gotten jarred loose. He stuck with it. It didn't. But that was a good effort out of 14. He knew he was up against the serious colossus.
If you told me 14 was any age from like 6 to 25, I would believe it. Like all perspective is lost from the height difference between those two gentlemen.
This is definitely a check the birth certificate situation here. Like, run it back again, because even number 68, who's walking toward after the play, like, there are some big dudes in this Pee Wee League. So, I know 99 is the biggest of them all, and he's got great hands to boot. Like, do they play with a regular size football? Because if that dude's got Kawhi Leonard hands at this age, like, we should just go ahead and sign him for whatever position. And I say we, of course, I mean the Florida Gators.
What I love about this is that, like, there are plays where an offensive lineman catches a pass. And usually it's like a trick play, like you'll leak somebody out or it'll be like a shovel pass or something unique. That did not happen on this play. They split my dude out and they were like, no, you are the Z receiver on this play. You are running a fade. We have you matched up against a 5'3" child. Like, we're going to throw you the football. It was like, that is so deliberate that I feel like there's more.
What is the strategy, Bill? Like, what do you do there? Like, does 1-4, instead of trying to jump, tell a teammate to come over, give him the boost, You know, give him the quick leg boost and then get him up there to deflect it. Okay. That's got to be the only strategy going forward.
Let me say that's the double team. 1-4 had a chance of this. The ball beat him. This is actually a better throw than he's going to get credit for here, because that ball was put up high away. I mean, this sounds ridiculous considering what we're looking at, but like that ball was put up high. But 1-4 had a chance. You know what I'm saying? That's why I think he actually thought he might be able to knock that guy over and jar the ball away. But the
pretty sure 99 would have caught 14 and the ball.
And the ball.
And still.
Had him for
still would have been fine.
Exactly.
I feel like we've all probably played pickup basketball before, where we've matched up against someone who's way better than us. And like, you know, after you get beat twice, you like run back down the court and you're like, oh, let's switch. Like, I'm going to take the guy who's standing in the corner. Like, I feel like that's what 14 needed to do, was just pass the buck to someone else on that defense. Like, there's got to be somebody.
I love playing against the bigger guy. Love playing against a bigger guy. You got to get your weight. You know, you really got to get in there. You got to just keep him, keep going at his legs. And like when he jumps, give him a little push. Every once in a while, throw him off balance. You know, they're not going to call a foul in the park on that because it's a big size discrepancy. Mm-hmm. I take huge pride as, let's say, a two guard size covering power forwards and centers.
So what you're saying is 14 should have gotten his knees.
You cover big guys. What's your flag football strategy when you cover big guys?
I'm faster than them. If they're between me and the ball, I'm screwed. But if I can get around them, I'll catch it.
I had to do it, Charlie. I had to bring up flag football one last time. Sorry. It had to happen.
I would say 3%. Because I feel like there's a chance that the rest of the world grows into this guy's size. Like, he's such...
99%.
Like, he's incredible.
99 for
Are you recruiting him for the Gators? Or once again...
It feels like it.
Your team.
It doesn't say keep playing receiver for the rest of his career. It just says keep playing receiver. And so the next game, absolutely. Next year, probably. Until he graduates high school, should get a couple of downs at wide receiver, and then we'll see what happens.
Mm-hmm. He looks like the kid that's now the state champion that's in that meme that was like, you know,
that's
did you see that
crazy. Isn't yeah, that crazy?
That, cool? That was so cool.
Memes. Famous meme people going on to real fame, I think, is kind of cool.
It's absolutely.
They're all grown up now. It's weird. It's weird. That's it, Charlie. That's all we got. Old. 10 seconds. Okay, I want to give a quick shout out to Tim Kirchin, who got the Hall of Fame honor. He's a really cool dude, baseball writer. If you don't know, go look it up. We all love Timmy. TK is the best. That's all.
How did that not happen already? That was very
crazy to me.
I thought it was the Kirchin Hall, the wing of the Hall of Fame already.
An icon.
Not yet. Okay, y'all got anything to plug? Do it quickly.
I'm be at the Nets Hawks game Friday night if you guys want to catch that on ESPN.
Bill?
I'm not going to be at the Nets Hawks game, but I'm going to go there now just to hang out with you.
Don't go to Dallas. I don't think they're going to like you over there.
That's debatable. And Poinsettia's a great holiday plant. Is he? Have a great day.
Debatable.